Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Limark Technical Nest. We've been here Sunday nights at 8 p.m. since 1982 under the direction of Silent Key Dick, K2RIW. And so it's another Sunday, and it's another 8 o'clock. I hope everyone had a very Merry Christmas, and I wish you all a happy and healthy New Year. Let's begin the show, if you will. As always, like to remind people. Well, let me drop for a second and just make sure that I'm full quieting the repeater. Okay, I'll take the silence as I'm full quieting the repeater. If you have any questions and you can't reach us here on the radio, we can also be accessed through EchoLink and IRLP, but if you can't get there from here, you could always send us email. Also, if you have any puzzles you'd like us to share with us, or topics you'd like to hear discussed, or if you'd like me to poke Paul in the shoulder and have him take a look at some news item about space and comment about it, the email address is, once again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. I have link pages regarding topics that are discussed. As new and interesting topics are discussed tonight, I'll keep a little list and, if possible, put some links up there. Already have a few interesting links. The annual Optical Illusions contest was held, which is really bad for radio, but websites are excellent for it. So I have a link to Optical Illusions that won a contest, if you're interested in such things. I have some images of the material picked up from the Hayabusa 2 space probe that the Japanese have launched and recovered bits and pieces of asteroids. So if you want to take a look, see what they look like, there are some pictures there. They're both on the link page, which is at roy.ac2gs.com. You just type into your browser in the URL slot, roy.ac2gs.com, and it'll bring you to my link page. If you're interested in chat rooms, you can either go to Limark's own website and find the link, or you can type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the Technical Net chat room. I stream this audio via internet, by the way. And if you have any friends or so that want to receive this, and they don't have a radio, and they don't have EchoLink, or they don't have IRLP, all you need is an internet connection. Again, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and it'll bring you the audio link. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike KC2NJI has a wonderful archive of these technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. His website is amateurradio.tv, so please avail yourself of it. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I have planned for you tonight. Okay. As always, I will ask if anyone has any questions or comments of a technical amateur radio question, topic, and put your name down. I'd like first names and call signs. And we'll try and get to you in order. Somewhere between 8:30 to 8:45, we will have another edition of Andy's Corner. Andy has some new information that he would like to share with us all, and I can't wait for it. Then when Andy is done, I'll come back and either finish up the technical questions or open the festivities for any kind of science, or if you're interested in any medical stuff, as long as it's not a personal question, you're interested in what I've fathomed about COVID-19 or what have you, that's the time for that, which should lead us into about 10:15, which will be time for Paul's space report. So that's my plans for tonight. It's nice to see that the audio stream is being picked up by about 6 people now, so that's nice. And not too many people on EchoLink, but hopefully that'll grow over time. Please, if you have any questions of a technical nature, hit that push-to-talk button and give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2VCQ, my name is George.
George recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight?
Hi, Roy. The name is Mike, Kilo Delta 2, Victor Delta Whiskey.
Okay, Mike recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight for any either technical questions or topics or comments or observations that they've made in this wonderful hobby of ours?
W1BKR, Bill.
Okay, Bill recognized. Let me start off with George, KD2VCQ. What's your question or comment for tonight, George?
Good evening, Roy. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to all. I have a quick question. I built an antenna lately. It's a 40-meter dipole. I measured it. I trimmed it. I got the SWR down to 1.2. And I'm having problems receiving and transmitting with it. I had to build it 9 feet off the ground, and I did have to lay the wire under vinyl siding, which is right up against my building. My building faces east. My suspicion is that I'm losing signal, that it's become directional because of the building, and I'm losing signal, and I can't pick up any transmissions from the west of me. But maybe somebody has a suggestion or idea that I haven't thought of that might be able to help. I'd appreciate any ideas. Thank you.
Okay, George, one big question is, how is it oriented? Is it a vertically oriented dipole, or is it a horizontally oriented dipole?
Sorry about that. It's a horizontally located dipole.
Okay, so you have a horizontally oriented 40-meter dipole 9 feet above the ground. Is that pretty much a good description?
It's a perfect description, yes.
Okay, unfortunately, it's going to go back to one of your main topics when we first met on this tactical net. What you've built is really a near vertical incident skyway, because when you set up a half wave dipole, in order to really get the signal out into the horizon, you have to elevate it at least half of a wavelength. So that's 20 meters, which is approximately 60 feet off of the ground. As you bring it closer and closer to the ground, you get two problems. One is that you get coupling to the ground, and a lot of your RF is being used to warm up the soil so that those earthworms underneath are enjoying themselves. And the other is that you're getting some degree of reflection that changes the radiation pattern of your horizontal from a donut shape that we all know and love to a very, very peaked signal that's going straight up. So you're getting a warm a cloud burner and you're coupling to ground. So two things that aren't terribly good for antennas in general. I mean, the fact that you're getting a near vertical incident sky wave, it might be what you're looking for, I don't know, but most people who are not looking for local contacts on 40 meters like to raise their dipoles at least a half of a wavelength before they feel that they've gotten as far out as they can. I mean, it's better if you put it up a little bit higher, but half of a wavelength seems to be about the closest to the earth you want to get to. And I'd be more than interested to hear other people's opinion on this subject. So if you do have an opinion, feel free to hit the push to talk.
Metrics is in words directed. I feel like my wave is directed, my antenna is directed. There is a difference between directed and limited in Turkey.
Okay, well, but both of them are not, well, it depends. If it's directed to the place you want it to be directed to, then that's good. If it's directed to a place where you don't want it to go, then you could just as easily say it's limited, but okay.
Well, he says he believes that his antenna might become directional. There is no directional limitation in Turkey.
Well, I mean, it might be, you know, he might have, he has a building on one side, so that limits the amount of propagation that's going to go through that. So I think it's, unfortunately, a combination of problems. I think, as I mentioned before, he has probably way too much ground coupling draining his transmitter power into the ground. And he has way too much RF that's going straight up into outer space. But, you know, again, that's just the way that I see it.
Directionality of an antenna is based on focusing the beam. Limitation is just taking spreaded part of the beam of circular pattern of an antenna and taking a part of it and allowing it to propagate further up or further down or further away. So that was my problem.
Okay, again, it strikes me as more a semantical argument than anything else. You know, it's a limitation if it's pointed in the wrong direction. If you want to contact people on, you know, the middle of the United States and for whatever reason your antenna is highly directional towards the Atlantic Ocean, then you have a limited device. Again, matter of semantics, but I think George is more interested in methods to explain and or to fix his particular situation rather than terms that we choose to use.
Well, this is not semantic, or it's not directly semantic. You have 100 watts, spread it 360 degrees, and you're taking 25 degrees of it. And you're trying to, not focusing, just push out the 25%, that 25% will go according to the inverse square law. But if you take the whole 100 watts, whole power of it, and put at the same exactly 25 degrees, then you have a 100 watts directed into that particular part of the beam. So it's not semantic. In order for somebody to know how to make the problem solve, there is a need to understand how many obstructions does he have, and does he have ability to either reposition his antenna without touching it, is he able to change the antenna for another one? One of the ways, let me jump. One of the ways that directionality is being done in cell phones, the company has a array of antennas, or small antennas. So that could be, in our situation, it could be small antennas, small coils. And this array of antennas is being delivered the signal a little bit different phase, which is not a big deal. And then you can actually, without touching, without repositioning this antenna, you can actually maneuver this beam left, right, up, down, up to your convenience. So that would be 90 degrees up, 90 degrees down. So that would be 180 degrees. And then you have ability to go 180 degrees one way and 180 degrees the other way. So that gives you 280 degrees. I didn't see that being employed to ham radio as of yet. I can send you the video if you want, Dr. Ray, about it. So what are the obstructions in Turkey?
Okay, we'll get back to George and ask him his obstruction. What you're discussing is beamforming. It's very useful for cell phones. It's used along with MIMO for Wi-Fi because it tends to be very useful for high frequencies where the radiating antennas are relatively small. For 40 meters, I've never seen either a beamforming or a MIMO type of antenna setup. 40 meters is just a little bit too big for that sort of stuff. But I'll send it back to George. Also, it sounded like someone was just not able to get full quieting on the repeater. It was just about 10, 15 seconds of noise. So if someone out there was trying to transmit a comment, maybe either up your output or wiggle your antenna in a slightly different direction. But first back to George, because Wesley would like you to describe the general geography and obstruction in your area.
Sure, thank you, Roy. My antenna is 9 feet off the ground. It is positioned from north to south on the east side of a wood-frame building. The building to the west of it is two apartments deep, my apartment and the apartment behind it. It's also two stories tall. So I have an apartment above me and two apartments directly to the west of my apartment. So it's two deep going east to west, and it's two deep going up from the first to the second floor. And it is right up against the wood wall. It's possible that there's power in the walls. I'm not sure. I don't think there should be a problem with that. And that's basically the way the antenna is situated. The secondary question to that is I've ordered an HFV5 antenna, and I spoke to, I believe, Wayne out of Diamond Antenna, and he was telling me that they've tested that and had no problem using it at 6 feet off the ground. My concern is, am I going to run into the same situation with that? It's actually, I understand, a dipole antenna.
Okay. Is it a wooden structure or brick?
No wood, no brick, no. Well, I mean, imagine there's net metal nails, but no, there's no metal and there's no brick.
Then you shouldn't have a problem. The frequency of electrical transmission line is 60 hertz, 50 hertz, whatever. Take the 180, 120 for the harmonics. It doesn't give any problem. The presence of some BXs and pipes should not really create interference in this frequency. So I would say you have open field. Dr. Roy, do you agree?
Well, as far as his building, I agree. There could be other buildings in the area getting in the way. I'm really having a problem with the 9 foot elevation of a horizontal dipole for 40 meters. I still think that's way too close to the ground. I'm looking at the HFV-5. It's basically a shortened trapped dipole. It goes for a bunch of different ranges. It goes from 6 meters to 40. You know, the 6 meter, you won't have any problem, I would perceive, as far as 9 feet of elevation. But, you know, the closer you're getting to a 40 meter resonant horizontal antenna, like I said, you really want to have it something like, and I know, you know, I'm just throwing out these numbers, and it's easy for me to just say it on the radio, but something like 60 feet. I mean, my fan dipole is roughly about 60 feet. My house is about from ground to roof is about 25 feet, and it has a Rhone extendable mast for about 30 feet. So roughly, give or take, it's at 60 feet, and it's decent. But I don't know. I think 9 feet. Although I understand that this is a compromised setup. I think you're going to have general problems with any kind of a resonant 40-meter horizontally polarized device only 9 feet off of the ground. BDH with a comment. Yes, John. I was just wondering, sometimes wood frame buildings have a wire mesh lath within the walls to hold plaster. Is it possible that the building could have that kind of structure? Because I know some older houses that, say, a wood frame also have a metal lath that's supporting internal plaster. That might be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, John. I mean, I have a brick house, and it has the old style of chicken wire and plaster. So that's a good question. George, do you know what kind of plaster is on the inside of your house? Is it plasterboard, or is it the old style plaster just kind of slapped on the wall like they used to in the good old days?
Actually, an excellent observation. Yeah, it could be plaster. We had our unit redone a few years ago. We gutted the whole thing, and we actually ripped out the plaster walls, and we had to put up sheetrock. But on the unit going toward my neighbors, I would say that they have plaster, and there's a good chance that they have lath in the wall, as well as the neighbor to the north of me. I would say I have 7 feet of element wire in front of the one neighbor's, and I have about, oh, I would say 7 feet of wire in front of the other neighbors. So it's quite possible that the last 7 to 10 feet of my elements are next to lath.
Interesting.
What was that, Wes?
I have an article that is exactly talking about the problem, and that was filmed from QSL.net. It's titled, How High Should My Dipole Be? So you just go to their browser, it's there in the example, and they actually use every frequency possible and height of recommended, and also they stress interesting things. So the height of the antenna is depends from what you want to do with the antenna. So that would be DX work, that would be local work, net, rack tubing. That would be directionality gain in one direction or not in some other direction. Or omnidirectionality, or feed point impedance at 50 ohms. So it's a simple, little bit of trade-off. The first question that is asked by W7EL is what you want to do with it. And then there is a graph. There is a list based on a practical measurement. So they took the various numbers of antennas. One of them was at 7 megahertz nominal, but comparative powers were computed by adjusting the frequency slightly for resonance and each height. And they've been playing with 0.5 wavelength at 7 feet to 4 wavelength at 560 feet above the ground. And even though it sounds ridiculous, 560 feet for 40 meters, you must keep in mind that the data can be scaled down to 10 meters dipole with similar results. So you have all of the answers for that question with a gain angle, feed point, and a frequency, and a bandwidth. Everything is there. So again, it's a QSL.net. It's a dipole antenna. How high should my dipole be? And it's in blue color. And to exit.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
I'll bet you Diamond did not test their antenna against the building like you're doing. I'll bet you it was in free space between two poles 6 feet high without any obstructions around it. I doubt if they did it, you know, with the extra impedances that, you know, that, excuse the expression, that you're dealing with. I also wonder if you could try maybe a long wire, if you could maybe add some feet to one end of it and try it as as a single wire, a long wire into an antenna tuner, into a transformer, then into an antenna tuner.
Mr. Roy, I shoot you that link to make some sense of it.
Okay, Wes. Let me first do one kind of thing at a time. The HVV-5 that George was mentioning from Diamond is not your standard dipole with connections to each leg of the dipole and then a center feed. They use rigid loaded traps, so there's only one mounting central portion, and so it has a single mount for the center, and the two dipoles kind of hang in free space with a series of loading and trapping connections kind of popping off at the edges. I don't know. Looks interesting, but probably lossy as heck. So I don't know what to make of it personally. But I'll take a look at the link that you sent me, Wesley. Also, just a small bit of suggestion, George. If you ever frequent QRZ.com, it's always nice to kind of get an account there free, and you can put your email address on it so that if people hear you on the radio and they want to email you some suggestions or links, it's an easy way of finding out what an email that will reach you is.
Sure. I'm actually looking at QRZ right now. I did join. I'm on there. And one quick question.
There is an article by Mike Bantz, BANZ AA3RL. That's the article that I should link to Dr. Roy. It does have everything that you need plus. And what is good about it, it takes care about radiation plus, about impedance, feed point, about fiber-rated direction. So you actually don't need to have any questions, just read it.
Wesley, I think you doubled with George there. George, could you repeat yourself?
Roy, I sure can. Thank you for all this information. Yeah, I did. I'm looking at QRZ as you speak. I actually joined it a couple of weeks ago. I'm trying to find out where I would ask a question. I'm looking through the titles. I don't find anything specific, but I'll figure that out. I don't want to waste anybody's time with that. He was talking about it. The dipole, he probably didn't test it up against the building. I'm sure it was in free space. I should be getting it by tomorrow or Tuesday at the latest, so I'll give everybody some feedback once I have it and I have a chance to play with it. I was wondering if I have the dipole and it's in the wall, I could lengthen one end and put a transformer at the other end. That's possible. I'd have to read about that. I don't know how to do it, but that's actually possible. And one last question about this particular antenna, which is giving me headaches. What if I put a wire, a reflector wire, down on like maybe 45-degree angles of an angle below it to the east? Would I be able to reflect the signal off to the west?
My guess would be not practically. I think there's too much other things going on. It's not like you have a dipole in free space. You have a dipole decidedly not in free space. It's very close to the ground, so it's coupling to the ground and draining power. It's also reflecting off the ground, and that's reinforcing most of the radiation pattern straight up instead of in a kind of omnidirectional, at least in two dimensions. You know, off to the legs of the dipole, it's a little bit less power going out. Most of it, a little bit more of it, is going to the right angle of the axis of your dipole. So I don't know if that would really add that much to your situation and probably be a significant amount of work to mount yourself some even larger passive device, and where exactly do you think you would post mount that passive device in order to reflect it back in the opposite direction?
The stand is supposed to be about 0.15 of a wavelength below I can achieve, but I have it 9 feet above the ground on the one side of my deck, and on the other side of my deck is a railing. It's a plastic railing, but it's a railing. I could probably mount that element there. I think I could run it. Oh yeah, I could probably run it the entire length of the elements along the ground at the edge of the building.
2R1.
Yes, David.
I had two thoughts. One is sloper, and two is inverted V.
Okay, well, I think the part of the problem is he doesn't have that much in the way of elevation, because he's starting off at only 9 feet. So a sloper going from 9 feet to ground is going to have somewhat the same problem. You need to kind of get up there, at least for 40 meters, in my experiences. And okay, inverted V is fine, but that's still the problem is getting the elevation for the two legs. Depending upon, you know, where you want to post everything. The reason that an inverted V is so nice is that you just have to elevate the center feed area higher than the rest, and the amount of current that gets transmitted near the center feed is significantly more than the edges, and so you get the elevation of a horizontal that's much higher, built much higher up because of the center feed location. But both of those things, to me, means that you need to get more elevation anyway.
82 VDW.
Yes, Mike.
I can suggest George finds out what the upper neighbor's favorite wine.
Say again?
I said I suggest that he finds out what the neighbor above him, you know, who has the deck above him, what his favorite wine is, so that maybe he can get more height that way.
Now, that's an excellent idea. I mean, basically what Mike is suggesting is, again, that you probably would benefit a great deal by elevating your radiator. If you had a vertical radiator, then elevation isn't that important. That's why you'll see ads for all kinds of vertical devices. You have to worry if it's too close to the ground that you need a lot of radials in order to offset the ground coupling. But if you got a vertical, say 6 feet off of 9 feet off the ground, certainly you wouldn't need quite that many radials, and it would have a nice omnidirectional signal. But when you start to play with things that are horizontally oriented, the higher up the better. And again, certainly, I would say the goal is to get it as close to half of a wavelength above the ground as humanly possible. Yes, Wesley.
To play devil advocate, I would disagree with you guys. The antennas known as high-Q antennas, they are made for mobile operation. So it's a coil with a little piece of vertical antenna, and they are omnidirectional antenna. And those are excellent antennas for DXing, and the elevation is 2 feet, 3 feet, sometimes 1 feet. I remember when Dick was telling, it is not important how big is the antenna. And it is not important what is the elevation of the antenna. It is just how good is that antenna for that particular frequency. And to actually.
Well, I used to chat with Dick about this frequently. You're making it a little too general. With horizontal antennas, to me, it's very important, the elevation. vertical antennas, it's not important. I just mentioned how vertical antennas, you can get away with a lot as long as you keep in mind the ground coupling. So you either keep it a little bit off the ground to lessen the ground coupling, or you use at least something like 36 radials to shield the ground coupling. Now, what you were just describing was a shortened vertical, which I said a vertical would kind of work. Shortened verticals in a perfect world where you have $1 million impedance matching coils will give you the same radiation aperture as a full length vertical. The problem, though, as I kept on mentioning back and forth to Dick, is that as you shorten a loaded vertical, you increase the Q, which also decreases the radiation resistance, which also increases the effect that any insertion loss from any connection, including the loading coil, has. So the average loading coil, it depends upon how much you shorten it and how long the wavelength is. It's not uncommon for a mobile ham stick made for 80 meters to have a efficiency of 1 to 2%. That's because of the greatly shrunken radiation resistance and the insertion losses of all the electronics. So on a theoretical basis, the infinitesimal dipole is real, but in practical terms, you have to pay a big price in order to attain anything reasonable.
I do absolutely agree with you. Can you make a better explanation of how to find that link to the audit that I sent you?
Well, when I get some time, when Andy's doing Andy's Corner, which will be any moment now, I will put it up on my link page. So if George wants to, he can go to roy.ac2gs.com, and he can get that link there. So that's a problem solved. But, I mean, there's a lot of very good sources. There's the ARRL handbook, I'm sure. It has information on that. There's the ARRL antenna book, which I think is a great bang for your buck. I have both of those books at the QTH. But, you know, there are a lot of sites. This is not magic. This is relatively basic electrical engineering.
Magnetic loops, they don't seem to be going away. The manufactured ones, a lot of them come with the motorized tuning mechanism. So at all, you know, at last cost, or at great cost, I would say, but as last resort, maybe a magnetic loop would do it.
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of the magnetic loops. There are some limitations. It's a very high Q device, and so if you don't have a somewhat expensive device to tune it for you, to tune it yourself every time you change the frequency very slightly can be annoying. And it has a limited amount of transmission power because it's a high Q, and the variable capacitor in the tuned system will suffer from a high voltage and arc if it's not rated high enough. So most magnetic loops only will take less than 100 watts, sometimes less than 50, so you have to be kind of cautious. I think with the problem with George is I don't think he has a lot of three-dimensional space to mount an antenna. He was just kind of tacking it on the wall of his apartment, and so on the outside at least. So I don't know if quite for him a magnetic loop would be suitable. I know people who have it pointed right next to the window, and it's better than nothing, but it's always nice to get your antenna on the outside rather than the inside.
Doesn't he have a deck? He was talking about his neighbor's deck.
Okay, that's a good point. George, do you have a deck?
My deck is on the ground. My neighbor's deck is above me, that's correct. I have access to the bottom of his deck. It's an open deck. It's 2x12 construction, going along the face of the from the building out, the same orientation as the building. And then above that, they put slats down, so I have access to the bottom of his deck.
Okay. I mean, theoretically, I've seen all kinds of numbers for a magnetic loop. It's best to have it about 6, 7, 8 feet off the ground, but, you know, it might be an option for you to think of to just mount it as high as you can in that little space that you own. And it's another option to consider. Magnetic loops, you can make them yourself. There are a lot of groups that discuss the nuances. You can buy them commercially, and they range from hand-tuned, that's a pain in the backside, but not quite as expensive as the others, which are electronically tuned. It'll sweep the frequency that you set it for, and it's a lot less of a nuisance, but you pay a little extra. So that's another option to consider, a magnetic loop.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you, everybody, for your suggestions. I appreciate the input. I wrote everything down. I'm going to take some time to research it tomorrow. And again, thank you for all your help, and I'll give it back to Roy.
Okay, very good. George, I wish you good luck, and please, when you come back, tell us what you found out and what you're planning to do, and I wish you good luck. Mike, KD2VDW, would you mind if I put the questions on hold for a little while so I can make room for Andy's corner?
Sure, no problem. My question's super simple, super fast either way.
Okay, so well, I told Andy that we'd try to get them about 8:30. So, Andy, if you're out there, let's hear it for Andy's corner.
Okay, Roy, thank you. This is WA2CDL. My name is Andy, and you're now listening to Andy's Corner. I apologize for last week. I was going to be discussing about dipole antennas and how to shorten them using loading coils due to the fact that you may not have enough room to put the dipole in where you want to place it, and you want to keep the efficiency of the dipole the same. So there's an article, there's a nice article in QST that I came across. It's called Designing a Shortened Antenna, and it actually shows you the by using pictorials and visualization that you need on where to place the coils and so on. And it gets a little bit into some mathematics, which I just don't want to get into because then it gets a little bit obscured. And it's, you know, for people out there, I'm not even sure how many people are listening to this conversation anyway. But I just want to mention to George, you see, it's interesting that I'm going to be having a discussion on antennas and propagation, but on a non-mathematical level. I think people will appreciate that. They don't have to really try to rattle their brain, try to figure things out. But I will say that what Roy just mentioned, I happen to have the ARRL antenna book right in my hand, and it's a great reference book. I have the 19th edition, and George, for your information, of course, I have a question. Why did you only mount it 9 feet above the ground in the first place? But that's just a question, and, of course, I'm asking myself that. Let me let it drop. And George, do not answer my question just yet. Oh, just to mention, and Roy, you can look this up. In Chapter 3 of the antenna book, there is that chapter is called The Effects of Ground, given the type of antenna that you want to place above the ground. So this is a generalized discussion on the effects of ground, and it happens to be 23 pages as far as discussing what ground does in the first place. So, you know, I can get into that alone, all right? But the good news is on page, chapter 3, page 9, if you look, you will see there is a pictorial, figure 10 says, effect of the ground on the radiation from a horizontal half-wave antenna for heights of 1/4, that's a quarter wavelength, and 1/2 wavelength. And it shows the actual radiation of that particular dipole at the different heights, both those heights. So you could clearly see that if you're only a quarter wavelength up, now you're only 9 feet at 40 meters. What 40 meters is what? 100 and approximately 3.28. So you got about 120 feet or so. So you think about 60 feet is half wave. 60 feet, and you're only 9 feet. I don't understand that. So that's why I'm mentioning what I'm mentioning. It's got to be at least the height that it shows you in the pictorial, because you'll see that the angle of radiation will reach far out, and you'll be able to have a nice DX transmission when it's a half wavelength, as opposed to even a quarter wavelength, where a quarter wavelength, your signal is going more vertical up and more vertical down into the ground, just like Roy said. So I would, my suggestion is at least a half wave, if not more. Not 9 feet, no way. Okay, now Roy, just to bring it back to you, do you agree with what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I stated it, you restated it, I'll restate it again. The only problem is that not everyone has edition 19. Different editions have different tables and such. Like, I just pulled mine, which is the 23rd edition. But, you know, you could look for it and find that information. The general guideline that people spitball all the time is it should always be at least a half of a wavelength above the ground for a horizontally oriented radiator.
Okay, very good. So we're on the same page. And, George, I guess you're listening. So, you know, if you can get a hold of this antenna book, it'll be, it's very useful. It's quite large. There's a lot of information to learn, a lot of reading to do, and of course it gets a little bit mathematical if you like the math on it. So I just wanted to mention that. Regarding to designing a shortened antenna, because it goes into some math, and you got to visualize this this particular article the way they're stating it. I found something that's a little bit easier to digest. And because I want to do this within a certain allocated time, and I found it's a study course on communications, and part of it deals with antennas and propagation. And I found the book that I was looking for. So if people don't mind, I'll do some reading here. I'll do some reading to give you some basic ideas of how radio waves travel. And the effect of how the ionosphere affects it, the radio waves, and it's mostly reading, and it's a few pages. So I just want to ask, as I go through this book here, yeah, before we get into the actual antennas, because we'll talk about antennas, so I'll break up this discussion into a number of weeks in sort of bite-sized pieces so people can get an idea. But the basic thing is, you know, how the antennas work and how the radio waves propagate and so on. So, Roy, would that be acceptable if I just keep, if I read about the antennas and propagation for the start?
That's perfectly fine, Andy. This is your gig. You do it the way that you feel comfy. Just as a little aside with George, unfortunately, I gather the reason why George put it up at 9 feet was because that's the elevation of his apartment. And unless he can find a good wine for his upstairs neighbor, that's the elevation he's sort of stuck with for the time being. But, you know, do it as you wish. This is your corner.
Okay, thank you. Is there somebody trying to get in? I didn't hear any audio, so I'm not sure. All right. I thought of, I thought of George possibly using a telescopic mast. You know, these fiberglass masts that you could buy, MFJ makes them, and they go up to 30, 40 feet. You could deploy it on the ground if you can. You could do that. You put one on one end of the property, put one on another end of the property, and you get yourself a nice dipole that's pretty high up, at least 30 feet. No, rather than 9. So there's many ways of doing it. All right, let me just take a pause. I don't time it out, and if anybody wants to chime in, now's the time.
Heard everything you said. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I really on height. I'm in an HOA, so I'm very limited in my options.
Okay, I got you, George. I'll make this really quick because I want to start this discussion here, and because I don't have that much time. I want to get this done because we have other people waiting after me. So, KG2RY, I've got your name all of a sudden, but that's okay. Go ahead, just make it quick.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening, everybody. You know, if you have an antenna and you try to position it as best you can with the most clearance that you can, you'd be surprised you can get results. I had a friend in Germany who ran an antenna along the wall, where the wall meets the roof, all around his apartment. He had coils for 40 meters, for 80 meters. He was operating 80 meters with an antenna inside his apartment, homebrewed. And he was working all kinds of stations. So I would say, you know, if you don't want to spend a lot of money and you just want to take this antenna and try to reposition it with the most clearance that you can possibly have, and I think you'll get results, KG2RY.
Okay, thank you for that. Let me start my discussion here. All right, so here we go on antennas and propagation, and it's basic stuff, and you'll understand it. I would believe for the most part, a radio transmitting antenna requires two antennas, one at a transmitter and one at a receiver. The transmitting antenna radiates the radio energy generated by the transmitter to the surrounding space. Radiated signal induces a voltage into the receiving antenna, and the signal is fed down the transmission line to the receiver input. Okay, pretty straightforward. The size and type of transmitting antenna used depends on the type of service to be given, the frequency of operation, the transmitter power, and the distance between the transmitting and receiving sites. Frequencies in the radio spectrum have been assigned by the FCC according to the suitability of certain bands for specific services. Some frequencies are more adaptable to broadcast services, local, regional, or international. Other frequency ranges are better for FM and television broadcasts, and still other bands are better suited to point-to-point communications, airwaves, and airport facilities, amateur radio operation, oceanic, telephone, etc. So as you see, we're talking about a broad subject here. There's a lot to it. Service to be provided and the frequency influence the size and type of the antenna used. For example, a radio broadcast station, AM, sends out a very strong signal over a regional or local area. The signal strength is usually so intense that a radio receiver can pick up a strong signal using a built-in loop or short length of wire as the antenna. and I'm sure you've all done this, you know what a loop stick is inside of your AM radio. The broadcast, let me let it drop because I don't want to time this out. Okay, the broadcast transmitting antenna is generally in the form of a high vertical tower that sends out a signal at uniform strength in all directions. Some broadcast stations use a group of radiating antenna towers to direct the signal into specific service areas according to the FCC recommendations. This is also done to avoid interference between stations operating on or near the same frequency, which you've probably seen antennas for broadcast stations out there in radio land. You know what they look like. You see these big towers, these FM stations or AM stations. For various point-to-point and long-distance radio links, both the transmitting and receiving antennas can be highly directional to concentrate the radiated signal into narrow beams between two or more fixed communication points. Now, as you see, I'm just discussing the basic operation of what these antennas do, as you've seen in the past. All right, let me let it drop. All right. In general, the higher the frequency of operation, the smaller the physical dimensions of the transmitting antenna. The antenna length depends on the wavelength of the carrier signal. Let me just get my page back. Stand by. Okay. The physical length of a standard AM broadcast antenna usually is represented by the total height of the antenna tower from the ground to the top. In FM and television services, the actual radiating portion of the antenna is mounted at the top of the tower. The tower itself does not radiate the VHF or UHF signal. Just like this repeater. This repeater has an antenna on the roof of a building. The whole building is not radiating. It's just the antenna itself on the roof. All right, stand by. So, in fact, the same tower used to support the FM or TV antenna can be used to send out an AM broadcast signal as well. You can actually use that tower to transmit an AM signal on a much lower frequency because the tower is so long. And at the same time, you mount an antenna on top of it, you can have another signal coming out of it. And that can be done. You have two separate frequencies coming out of the same structure, two separate antennas, which we know because we can mount, and this is all, I'm not reading this, I'm just letting you know. You could take two beams, put them on your roof, side by side at two different frequencies, and they won't really see each other. And I think Dick has discussed that before. So, given what I just mentioned, you will learn more about the various types of antennas and the methods used to make them directional in this and the following lessons. In this lesson, we will first consider some characteristics of radio waves and see how the ionosphere and other propagation variables influence signal transmission. Next, you will learn why the characteristics of some frequency bands are better suited for one type of service than another. Other sections of this lesson will take up antenna fundamentals, antenna power, radiated field strength measurements, and examples of standard AM broadcast antennas. Okay, so that concludes that prelude to what we're going to be talking about, which will start with radio wave propagation. So up to now, any people out there? W82CDO. All right. Very good. This is W82CDL. You're listening to Andy's Corner. And what time do I have? It's just after 9 o'clock. Okay. So, here we go on the basic laws. So, everyone knows about electricity and magnetism. I'm sure you know that you could generate you could induce a voltage into a piece of wire by taking a magnet, taking a coil of wire, and you make it into a coil. You take a magnet, you put it in the middle of the coil, you move the magnet back and forth, and this is, a voltage, which lights up a light bulb. So you also know from theory, most of you, that like charges repel,